You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
I'm Ann Barnes Wilmot Swenson, and I was born on the 4th of August, 1933, in Islington, London, England.
Ann Swenson is a strong, curious, and deeply faithful woman whose life has been shaped by resilience, service, and love for her family. She was born in 1933 in London, England, and grew up during World War II. Ann's father was away for 5 years during the war. He had not been rescued at Dunkirk and then became a prisoner of war in Switzerland. After the war, Ann immigrated with her family to Canada and later moved to Provo, Utah to attend BYU. She married her husband, Royal J. Swenson, in 1953, and together they raised 7 amazing children while navigating frequent moves, financial challenges, and everything in between. An avid lifelong learner, Ann returned to school later in life, earning 2 bachelor's degrees, becoming a registered nurse, and completing a master's degree in social work. She devoted her life to caring for others as a mother, a nurse, and a temple worker for over 30 years. She is known for the deep, constant love that she's always shown to her children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren.
My mother was 35 when she married my dad, and they got pregnant that first year, and she lost the baby. And the doctors told her that she would never be able to have children. She, being a member of the church, went to the patriarch in London, and he gave her a blessing. And his last name was Wallace. And he also wrote the hymn, Come Ye Children of the Lord. But he gave her a blessing and told her that she would be able to have children. So they decided to try again, and I was born in 1933.
Ann's father's family had deep roots in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints in London. One of her direct ancestors, John Wilmot, was among the first to be baptized there, while Ann's mother found the church as a young woman walking in Hyde Park.
She was walking in Hyde Park when she was 16 and heard the missionaries and believed them, and tried to tell her parents that she wanted to be baptized, but they said not until you're of age. And so when she was 21, 2 weeks later, she was baptized. We went to a branch outside of London. It was a small branch. There was our family and one other family. But during the war, we weren't allowed to meet there. So if we ever went to church, we'd have to take the train into London, where they still had some meetings going on at the church headquarters there.
Much of Ann's childhood was spent playing alongside her twin brothers and younger sister.
I had twin brothers that were 2 years younger than me, and then I had a sister. We played outside all the time. We were good playing games with tennis balls and hitting the house and, you know, seeing how many tricks we could do before the ball came back. And, you know, we tried to get away from my mother so that she could not keep an eye on us. And I was a great reader, and we had a library, and I could go get as many books as I wanted. And I would read all the way home. And by the time I got home, I probably read a book. And so we were always going back and forth to the library. And there was lots of open areas and woods and ponds. And we used to run wild, literally. We used to run all day long out in the woods. We gathered blackberries and we picked bluebells in the spring and ate blackberries in the fall. One time we picked a load of blackberries and we couldn't eat them all. So we brought them home and we left them in the can on the kitchen table. And in the morning, there were little white worms all over them. But it never stopped us from going back and picking more and eating them. And in the fall, we would go and steal pears from people's gardens. And then we tell my mother that the nice lady gave to us, but I don't think she was fooled. So yeah, my brothers and I did things together, but not much with Frances. My brothers would make her climb to the top diving board, and they would push her off, and I would be underneath the diving board to catch her and take her to the side. I think we drove my mother crazy those years that my dad was gone, because she had all that responsibility. And it wasn't until she passed away that I realized how hard her life was and what she put up with. And but she never gave up. She was just a good person.
Anne grew up in London in the height of World War II, and many of her memories are shaped by air raids and nights spent in bomb shelters. For 5 years, her father was away at war. After Dunkirk, he became a prisoner of war in Switzerland, and for 10 months, Anne's family didn't know whether he was alive or dead.
So my father was in the military, and that's the story of itself. He was gone for 5 years. He was not rescued at Dunkirk. He escaped from Germany-controlled France, so he had to make his way by night and hope that the French people would give him a place to sleep and food during the day. And he did not ever want to really talk about that experience. It was not pleasant. And so he made his way to Switzerland. He escaped from the Germans and went to Switzerland. And he was there for about 4.5 years. And so for some time, we did not know whether my dad was alive or not until the Red Cross was allowed to go in. They actually had prisoner of war camps for the British and for the Germans, because Switzerland was neutral. And so my mother did not know for 10 months that whether my dad was alive or not. I was 6 and I was 11 when he came home. And that was right before the end of the war. We had a bomb shelter built in the backyard. They dug it for us. And we used to go out there at night and sleep. And then we also had one built in our house. And that was called a Morrison's shelter. And it was like a big steel table. And when the air raid alarm sounded, you got underneath there and slept until the doodlebugs came. They weren't manned by pilots, and you never knew when they were coming. And so really having a shelter was useless, because it was so unpredictable. I remember bombs falling in the neighborhood. The house was bombed. Several houses were bombed on our way to school, and we just crawled through the rubble because it was a shortcut. You just get on with life no matter what happens. So we just use that as a shortcut.
After the war was over, Anne's family left England and immigrated to Cardston, Alberta, Canada.
My dad was not able to make the arrangements to go to come here to the U.S., but he had a sister that lived in Western Canada. So my mother, in particular, considered herself English until the day she died. But she said that she would not go back because she wanted to be where there were more church members and where her children could have more opportunities. My brothers and I decided on the plane that we were not going to keep our English accent, that we were going to get rid of it. And now I feel really sad. I wish I kept some of it. My dad used to say that when I got upset, I sounded English again. We arrived in December. Very, very cold. And my aunt really didn't have the room for us, and she did the best she could. And my cousin, her daughter, and I, and the twins, we slept out on what you would call a deck or a patio. And she loaded us up with quilts and everything, but we always were cold until the winter was over. And it was a culture shock. I mean, it was just very difficult. It was a total change of life for us and trying to understand what people meant when they used their lingo versus what our lingo was. And I have to say that my brothers were not treated well. They were kind of mischievous, and they had a track record of that. And it was hard for my dad. He could not work as a baker because the Canadian flour was so fine, it made his asthma flare up. And so he worked running a dairy for a number of years. And then when physically he couldn't do that anymore, then he managed a hotel. I can remember going down to the bakery because he told me that if I did well in school, you had to write tests in order to continue your education past 14. And I got a really great score. And he had told me if I did well, he would buy me a new bicycle. So when I got the results, I went over to the bakery and I said, you have to buy me a bicycle now, Dad. And he did, because I did well.
Anne began to adjust to her new life in Cardston and enjoyed high school there.
High school dances were on the weekends, were the things to do. We went to the basketball games. I worked in a library several evenings a week, so that took up my time too.
Anne moved to Provo, Utah to attend Brigham Young University, spending her first quarter living in the dorms. She later moved in with a family to care for their children and help cover her expenses.
The first few months, I was very homesick. And I could not wait to get home for Christmas. And then when I got home for Christmas, I realized I didn't have much to do now that I was home, you know. So I couldn't wait to get back to school. So I did get used to going to BYU, but it was a little different. What I did after Christmas was I went and lived with the family and I took care of their children. And I always went to dances if I could. But after I moved out of the dorms, then I led a much quieter life because I was taking care of kids.
Later, Anne moved in with five girls, two of whom she knew from home. That move would lead her to meet her eternal companion, Jay.
Two of them were from Cardston that I knew. And I can't remember where the other girls were from. But anyway, Barbara and Karma were my friends. And we had just settled in when this woman came banging on our front door and said, I need you girls to help me. What? She said, I did not know that school was starting right away. And my boys are coming today, and I haven't got their rooms ready. And I'll pay you if you'll come over. So we went over, and we straightened up the rooms, and we made the beds. And there was a box with a pair of cowboy boots. I got the boots out, and I put them on and started clomping around the bedroom. And somebody opened the door, and he said, what are you doing in my cowboy boots? And that's how we met. And we got talking, and he said, do you want to go to the football game? And he'll probably tell you, I knew nothing about football. So we went to the football game, and then we went to the dance afterwards. It was probably one of the longest dates in history. But that was it. We've, you know, been together ever since. He has this quick wit, and my dad had a very quick wit, so I was used to that. And he would tell stories, and he would make up stories. I can't believe I believed some of them, but I did. And he was just very interesting to me. And he had this blonde hair, it was so blonde, and blue eyes. And yeah, I just liked him.
Anne and Jay were married on July 3rd, 1953, in the Logan, Utah temple.
I came home early from school so I could work and save some money. And then we got married on July 3rd, 1953. We got married in the Logan Temple. We got married on the 3rd of July, that's what he said. He lost his independence because the next day was Independence Day, but he lost his independence on the 3rd of July. And then we had the reception, and his old girlfriend's mother gave us a 50-cent hot plate, which she thought would probably be a terrible present, but it wasn't. After we had our first child, I used that to warm Linda's bottle at night. So I wanted to say, well, little did you know how useful this present became. My mother took me to Lethbridge, and we bought my dress there, and it was really, really a pretty dress. And in fact, when we went to the temple to get married, in those days you could wear your temple dress, and you had to go through an endowment first before you. And I wore my dress all the way, and it was, you know, it had petticoats and everything. And so they had to save me DNC so that I wouldn't, you know, wrinkle up my dress, yeah. We spent the night in the Malaya Hotel, and then we came back the next day, and then Jay went to work for a construction company shortly after that.
Just as Anne and Jay were ready to start their life as a married couple, things took an unexpected turn.
And then the bomb dropped. I got a letter, and I had overstayed my visa. And if I didn't leave, they would deport me, which would mean you never get back. And so I went back to Carson, and I was pregnant that time. I went back and lived with my parents. Linda, our first child, was born there. I went to work as soon as I could, and my mother took care of Linda. And my dad was very close to, he loved his grandchildren very much, and he was close to Linda. And then by the time my paperwork was all done, Jay came to get me. He was going to BYU. You know, we thought we were going to now be a little family, and it just didn't work out that way. He got drafted into the Army. And by this time, I was pregnant with number two, and I thought I might stay in Milan. And I did for a few months, but then I went home and lived with my parents, and I worked there while he was in the Army because he got sent to Germany. We were separated for 18 months. I worked as a waitress in a restaurant there. A friend of mine's mother owned a restaurant, and so I went to work there, because the hours were conducive to, I could, you know, get up early, go to work, and come home fairly early in the day, and then, yeah, get be home with the kids.
Despite being apart from Jay, Anne found joy in becoming a new mother to Linda and then Jackie.
I was really surprised at how good a baby can be, because now we admit that Linda wasn't too, I mean, she cried a lot. And she didn't want to sleep at night. She wanted to be awake all night, and that was hard. And then I got Jackie, and she'd wake up to have a bottle in the middle of the night. Then she'd go right back to sleep. I could not believe that. And actually, she slept in a pasteboard box for the first 6 weeks of her life, because I had a bedroom at my parents' house. They were just two bedrooms upstairs. And I had a little crib in there for Linda. And I didn't know where I was going to put something for Jackie. So I just got a pasteboard box, and she slept from that for 6 weeks. That worked very well.
Finally, Anne and Jay were reunited and moved to Logan, Utah, so Jay could attend Utah State. They lived in a Quonset hut, then a two-bedroom apartment with four young kids. But they enjoyed their little family and made the most of what they had.
When he went in the Army, BYU said that they would put him on the list for married housing, so that when he came back, we wouldn't have to worry about where we're going to live. So then we found out they had no housing. We were still pretty much on the bottom of the list. And he said, to heck with it. So we drove up to Logan, and he registered at Utah State. And actually, they had housing for us. It was a Quonset hut to start with. There's funny stories about living as a Quonset hut. It's one of those metal military buildings. And it got really cold in the winter because you're living in a metal building. And so he would bank up the fire so the kids wouldn't get cold. And we bundled them up. And by morning, they'd thrown off all their covers and they were really cold. But we lived, I made it kind of cute. It had red rugs and hung curtains. I mean, we managed. And then afterwards, we got into the college apartments and we lived there for 4 years while he finished his education. Because I was such a good waitress, they were looking for people to be able to serve at banquets. And because I knew how to do that, I was asked if I would be in charge of a bunch of women and train them how to do that and how to serve. And so that's what I did for most of the time when I was working there. David was born in Logan, and then Michael was born in Logan. We were living in the college apartments. So we had 2 rooms and 4 children. We were excited to have a boy, but Jay told his mother, it was April Fool's Day, we have twin girls. And she was so happy. She said, oh, Jay, I've always wanted to have twins. He said, April Fool's, mother. It's a boy, and she cried. She said, oh, I wanted twins, twin girls. And yeah, David was sick a lot the first year of his life, really sick. And there was a time when we thought maybe he would not make it, but he did. And I walked the floor with him many nights. He was so sick. And then Michael came along, and he had somewhat of the same problems, but not as much. And he was a real sweet little boy, real sweet, kind boy. And David was the boss of the neighborhood. And Michael was a real sweet boy. What else could I say? They played outside a lot. And there's lots of stories about David, who was really small because he was born with some bronchial conditions. But he was top dog in the neighborhood. He rode his little tricycle and waved a stick and told all the other boys what to do. And they played out. So there were 2 blocks of apartments that faced each other. And so the kids could all go outside and play together. And that's what they did. And the girls did too. One day Jay came home from school and Jackie had taken her little potty out and put it, we had just a little piece of lawn, and she set it out there and she, with no clothes on, and sat on the pot. And he was so embarrassed, he just picked her up, pot and all, and carried her into the house. And, you know, I wasn't doing a very good job taking care of these kids.
The Swenson family continued to grow as they moved from Logan to Blackfoot, Idaho, and then on to Cooley Dam, Washington.
We lived in Logan for a while. And then we went to Blackfoot, Idaho, and he had a job with the Bureau of Land Management. And we bought this cute little house on South Schilling Street. And it was a real little house. It had real bedrooms. And it was just that it had a really nice little backyard. And I was so glad to be in a real little house where I didn't have to sleep in the same room with 4 children. And so they could have their own rooms. It was really nice. We liked it there. We had a big garden across the street. And I worked in the garden because I liked to garden. And I can remember I was picking beans right before I went to the hospital to have Allison, or Sally, as we called her. That was a difficult birth. And she always wanted to be in the same room with us. We lived in Blackfoot, for about 2 or 3 years. Then he got transferred up to Cooley Dam, Washington. And that was a fun place to live because we were right on the river. And we used to go, after he got through working, We'd pack up some food and we'd go down by the river so the kids could play. And this is where Cece was born. We call her that dam baby because she was born in Julia, Washington. You know, then we had six kids. That was going to be the end.
Their family's next move was to Auburn, New York, a place that they loved very much. They then went on to Garden City, Kansas, and then to Plano, Texas. Along the way, they added one more baby to the mix.
Just beautiful. Had good friends there that we met. We had this big old country house, and we had a big dog, Empress, and then she had puppies, and we kept one of them. And it was just a wonderful country life. We were close to one of the Finger Lakes. We used to go down there and bathe even on Saturday night. We can't do that anymore. But they had this beautiful house out in Scipio Center. It was just beautiful. It was a wonderful life.
And then we had to move again.
And I cried. I did not want to leave my house. I did not want to leave that country life. I just loved it. But then what we had to, so we went to Garden City, Kansas, which after you've lived in upstate New York is like the end of the world. And he worked there for Kansas State University. And then he got offered a job to work with Chevron. He took that job and he went to Texas, which was going to be the Texas ahead of us. And I was left at Garden City to take care of things. And then there was a tornado. And our dog knew that there was a tornado coming. And she got under the kitchen table and she would not move. And David said, "Mom, there's a big storm coming. And my bike's outside." And I opened the door and the wind was blowing so hard. I wouldn't let him go get his bike. I went and got his bike and brought it in. And I could see the clouds were green and rolling. And the next thing you know, there was the roar of tornado. And it was very close to us. Well, Jay heard about the tornado, but he couldn't get through. So he drove all the way from Texas to Garden City to find out if we were all right. And we were. But all the things that I'd packed ready to go, the wind had twisted all the towels and sheets up together and sort of unpacked everything that we packed. So we had to repack again. Our oldest daughters didn't really want to move. And it was hard for them to adjust because by now they were going to be in high school and it was a difficult adjustment. But we did move and we lived there for 10 years. And sometime there, I got pregnant again. And that was the child that we didn't plan on having. But we see now that there was a reason that we had Jennifer. She was our baby, and the kids loved her, except our oldest daughter said, "You know what we paid for her? We could have had a new couch." But we loved her, and the kids spoiled her when they got home from school. They wanted to play with Jennifer. So I always said the only time I had Jennifer to myself was in the middle of the night.
As one could imagine, family life with seven kids was busy, hectic, and lots of fun.
But before that, I had had six kids in less than 10 years. We were always driving the kids somewhere to do something. Sports and dance and piano lessons. And the boys were in scouts. So when I said it was a hectic life. What did I do? I cooked and cleaned and took care of kids. And I was very fussy about my house. I was very fussy about my laundry. I wanted things to be clean. I want my kids to always look clean. And I would change their clothes. After lunch, I'd put clean clothes on them so that they were always clean. And they had little white shoes, and I polished them every night before they went to bed. I just wanted things to be neat and clean. We loved to go for walks. I always read to them night before they went to bed. David and Michael would take all the books out of the bookcase. And this is when Sally was a little baby. And they would build buildings with all my books. And I didn't care. And run little cars. And Sally, I guess, have this picture of Sally just being a toddler, just laying on the floor, watching these boys and playing with them. And they say, Sally, that's how she got named, because David didn't say Allison. I can't remember. Just one day he was calling her Sally, that I remember. And then we all called her Sally. And the day she got married, the bishop said, well, you have to sign your name Allison. And she said, oh, no, my name is Sally.
After 10 years in Texas, their family moved to Bountiful, Utah, and that's where Anne decided to go back to school at the University of Utah.
I never thought that I'd be smart enough to go to college. And so I was just going to take a class. And Jay said, oh, if you're going to go back to school, go back to school. So I registered at University of Utah. And I said, if I can just make a C, I'll be happy. And then I found out that, hey, I could really go to school. I could make good grades. And I did. And I got a scholarship, so I didn't have to pay tuition anymore. And so I got 2 degrees, psychology and family life. And I was going to stay and get a master's in social work. But yet he got transferred up to the Tri-Cities in Washington. And we really debated about whether I should stay and he should go. So then when I got there, I said, well, you know, they got a nursing program out here. I can't get a master's here, but I can go and get be a nurse. And he said, I don't want you to do that. I said, well, why don't I apply and see what happens? I applied and I got accepted just like that. And so I went to nursing school and became an RN while we lived in Kennewick. I went to school in Pasco, but we lived in Kennewick. I graduated from University of Utah in 1980. I got my nursing degree in 1983. I got a master's degree in counseling in 1988. And I went to night school to get that master's degree and then spent summers at the campus of Idaho State University. And I was working full-time and I had a house full of people living here. And honestly, I look back and I don't know how I did it. And it was fun. I loved school. I would go to school forever if I could. Then we moved here and I took my boards here in Idaho so I could get a job right away. And I did. I got a job at St. Luke's. I worked on the med-surg floor. So we got people ready for surgery. Then we took care of them right after surgery. So we did lots of tubes and IVs and wounds. And I loved to take care of wounds. I became a wound nurse later on. I just loved to take care of wounds and gunky things. And I worked there for a number of years. And then I became an administrator at a long-term care facility until I retired.
Finally, the Swensons landed in Boise, Idaho, and found the home that would become a treasured gathering place for their family.
Well, we walked around and drove around, and we didn't find anything I wanted, and then we came here. I said, this house I wanted, though. I sat right there on the floor, and I said, I'm not going anywhere until you buy this house. And some of the girls were here, and they said, Dad, you may as well just buy this house. It's the one that Mom wants. He said, we can't afford it. I said, we'll figure it out. I'm going to work. We'll figure it out. And I have never regretted. And he never has either, because we have loved living here. And we've loved the big yard where he could garden. And our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids love this house so much. And we have a great-grandson named Evan. And I babysat him. Till he was in high school. He would come home. He'd ride the bus here. But he said to me one day, Grandma, you can never sell this house. This is the Swenson family house, and you can never sell it.
It was in that house that Anne cared for her daughter, Sally, who became terminally ill. Sally's passing was heartbreaking for their family, and through that experience, Anne has relied on her faith that she will be with her daughter again someday.
She got diagnosed and she had a glioblastoma multiforme, which means it's just a death penalty. And they said she wouldn't live for more than 6 to 8 weeks, but she lived. I brought her home and I took care of her till she died 14 months later. And that was, it was hard, but I was so glad that I had that chance to take care of her. And when she got so sick, at the end, I said, Sally, you don't have to do this anymore. She said, Mom, don't you want to take care of me? And I said, I could take care of you forever, but you don't have to go through this anymore if you don't want to. And 3 weeks later, she died. So, and all of her brothers and sisters were there around her bed when she died.
Anne's life has been full of service towards others and meaningful endeavors and hobbies.
Primary president, teached Relief Society, primary chorister on the state primary board. I love being the chorister for primary. I still love being, I'm an award chorister right now, and I love doing that. Was a chapel worker for 31 years. I just retired from that. And now I do a lot of, I've done a lot of family history for several years. And I have a book club, and I have lots of older friends, and I love to read, and I love to watch PBS dramas. And I like to try out new recipes. And I have a little flower garden out there that's called Sally's Memorial Garden. I just stay busy. There's not enough hours in the day for me to do everything that I want to. And I'm tireder than I used to be. I can't get up early like I used to. And so I don't have as many days, or as many hours in the day to do all the things I want to do. I'm curious. I want to know about everything. And that's still what I want to do. I want to know about everything, but not in this life, I guess.
Throughout Anne's life, she has had some very exciting travels all over the world.
We've been on several cruises. And I think our favorite one was when we went on the Mediterranean cruise. I said, this is going to be expensive. He said, okay, we're only going to be 75 once. Let's do it. So we did it. And it was great. We had great weather. Oh, it was fun. We've been to the Caribbean. We've been to the Mexican Riviera. We've done Alaska cruise twice. And then I used to go back to England. And then our daughter lived in Japan. And so Jay and I went several times, but then I went almost every year. They were in Japan for 8 years, and I went almost every year to stay with them for a while. I loved Japan. On one of my trips to Japan to see Cece, she made arrangements. She was going to do a tour of India, and did I want to go? And I said, of course. So we flew to India. Now, first of all, we landed in Korea in the middle of the night. Most beautiful, perfect airport, clean, spotless. And then you land in India. The wind is blowing. The papers are all over. I mean, you just can't imagine the difference between Korea and India. And we got out. It was the middle of the night when we landed there. Then we got on a bus and we spent, I don't know how many days, touring all over. And the highlight of the trip for me was camping in the desert. We lived in tents, but they made them real fancy. And then we went to a place where they had elephants. And I did ride the elephant. But then when we camped in the desert, I loved the camels. We all had our own camels, and we would ride our camels in the desert. And one night, it was evening, and we were riding our camels back to camp, and I can just remember the sunset, how beautiful. It was just one of the most beautiful experiences of my life. And then I went back another year, and I took Jennifer with me, and we went to the foothills of the Himalayas. We stayed in Darjeeling and found us a little restaurant where we loved to eat, and the mountains were so close, the Himalayas, and then we did take a hike one morning up where we could see the sunrise over Mount Everest. It truly two exotic trips. I just absolutely love India, and I'm certainly glad that the church is doing well there. The Indian people are wonderful. Their children are beautiful.
In her later years, something that has become Anne's signature is her purple hair.
I used to, color my hair when it started to go gray. And then one day I said, it costs a lot of money, it's a lot of trouble. I think I'll let my hair go gray. But if I do, and I told my hairdresser, I'm going to spray purple in it. And I don't know why. And then we let it grow gray. And then we bought cans of hairspray. And I found out that you can get it for 10 bucks at Walmart. And you can spray it. And then it washes out. My one son thinks I'm crazy. I said, maybe it is reverting back to being a teenager. But I didn't have much of a life when I was a teenager. So, hey, I got purple hair now.
As grandkids and great-grandkids have been added to their family, the Swensons have stayed closely connected through gathering and through special traditions.
I used to have family dinners every Sunday. We'd have a birthday dinner for like July. And then we have a Christmas tradition where everybody that's in town comes over on Christmas Eve. And we have a buffet, and it's always a ham buffet with homemade rolls. And then afterwards, we go downstairs. I tell a Christmas story. And then we play this game, and I write a story every year about Santa Claus and Rudolph. And it's like the left-right things. Santa Claus get up in the morning and put his left shoe on and things. And they pass around boxes of cereal. And then when the story's over, whatever box of cereal you've got is yours. And then I tell them, you can trade if you want. That's just been a fun thing. And every year I try to write a new story, but I'm kind of running out of ideas. And they like to play that. We call it the cereal game. We play the cereal game. And then we read out of Luke. And we talk a little bit more about the meaning of Christmas. It's hard to put into words. I always wanted to have a lot of children. My life growing up was so difficult, really. My dad had PTSD when he got back, but they didn't know what that was then. And so it was real difficult. And then we moved to Canada. Boy, and I guess that was a good move, but it was hard for us kids. And so I always thought I wanted to have a lot of kids and provide a place where they could be safe and be at home and we could be a real family. And I think in so many ways they've known how much I love them, and that's why they like to come over.
Anne and Jay have been married for over 70 years. The love they share is clear and has been forged through a lifetime of learning and growing together.
My love is white hair. He was blonde, and then one day he turned silver, and I was stroking his hair, and all of a sudden I looked at it and I started to cry. I said, your hair has turned silver. And I didn't even know it because he's white-headed. But that's just a physical thing. He stands by me no matter what. And I know I drive him crazy. But he stands by me. And he is a worker. I watch him work outside now, and I know he shouldn't be doing that. It's too hard for him. He does it anyway. He's always worked hard. He's faithful. And that's a tribute. He's faithful. And he's just Jay. We've been friends all these years. And we can fight still about politics and all that. He's still Jay. And I can't imagine my life without him.
Life hasn't always been easy for Anne and her family. But through her trials, she's relied on Jesus Christ and allowed the hard times to make her stronger and more reliant upon him.
You named the trial. We probably had it. With money? No. With work? What to do about work? With children not being obedient all the time? We took one of our grandsons to raise. We loved him so much. And yes, we had trials. But we always knew who he was and who he was going to be and that it would be all right. And it is all right now. And then our boys were sick. David was so sick when he was a baby. And we had doctor bills that we couldn't pay. And so we went to the doctor in Malad when David was really sick. And we sat there and we sat there and we sat there and they didn't take him back and they came. And we asked the nurse, well, why aren't you going to see David? And she said, well, you owe money here. So we picked him up and we drove all the way to Logan, Utah with him turning blue. And we got to the doctor's office and I sat in the car and Jay took David and ran up to the doctor who was just about to leave. But we really thought that we were going to lose him. But my son told me something last night. He was over here and we were just talking spiritual things. And he said, people think that we came to earth innocent, in essence, because of the repentance plan. That we will be innocent. We will go from innocence to innocence. He said, that's not right. We go from innocence to experience. We were sent here to learn the difference between the bitter and the sweet and to make our decisions about what is important to us. And so we will gain that experience in order to progress in the next life. And I think that is such a good way of looking at it. We've had experience, and it just brought everybody together rather than driven people apart. You know, this last accident that I had in the hospital where I really wanted to die, I was in so much pain. I just could not stand it anymore. And I told Jesus I just could not stand this anymore. And he said, I know what pain is. And I said, will I live till morning? And the Spirit said, you will live till morning. And I did. And then in the morning, they changed my medications. And so I got better, faster. But that experience with him, you can say it's all in my head, that I made it up. But hey, he is my Jesus. And I wear his cross because he's my Jesus. He really lives. He really sacrificed his life for all of us. I know that the day will come that I can be in his presence again and in the presence of my heavenly parents. I want all of my children to know that I want all of them there and all of my grandchildren, all of my great-grandchildren. And I pray for them every single night. That they will want to be there. And of course, Mr. Swenson there, he's going to be right there too.
As you've heard, Anne's life has been full of movement, learning, service, love, and faith. Through war, loss, change, and joy, she has built a life centered on family and her trust in the Savior. Anne's story is a testament to enduring, choosing faith through hard things, and creating a loving home no matter where life has taken them. A huge thank you to the Swensons for being interviewed. If there is someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.